Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, are you all recovered from our efforts last week at catching punts and kickoffs with our buddy Landon?
I forgot. I honestly forgot about that. Yes, at this point I am recovered, although I did, not to spoil anything, but there's a dramatic ending to his video. I think that's the way they're going to end it. It did take me a couple days to recover from that, which is disappointing that I'm at the age or the softness level that I take time to recover, Jim. And I know, like, you know, I'm not in my 20s anymore, but I've grown up a pretty tough person, I thought, until then. And now I'm having to question, like, my lifestyle, and do I need to start, like, going out in the woods and running into trees to toughen, leather myself up a little more? But probably not. I've grown accustomed to this cushy lifestyle.
Well, you say you're not in your 20s anymore. I'm not in my 50s anymore. But first of all, I got to explain to our listeners the difference between you and I. You came ready, my friend. You had the high top cleats, the headband, the gloves. Here is how I would define the difference between you and I going into this. You were intent on catching every ball, kick, yes, punt, whatever. My intent was to not get injured.
Yeah, well, it goes to a conversation you and I were just having off air, which is, like, I like to be prepared for the task I'm about to try and accomplish. And when I'm out in a field trying to catch footballs, I'm going to do whatever I can to be in a position to catch a football. The entertainment value is how many I actually did catch. But I want to be prepared. I was going to actually use mascara as eye black, because I don't have eye black. And I was going to borrow my wife's mascara to put on some eye black and really just the cherry on top of going way too over the top. But I chickened out.
I will say this. Try the football. We needed Tom Brady to deflate the football a little bit. It's hard.
Okay. All right. So I don't know when it's coming out. I'm curious to see when it's coming out. But Landon Tangwall, our mutual friend, invited us out to the IM Fields to shag punts and footballs or kickoffs from Alex Falcons, who is transitioning to being an NFL kicker. So he was using NFL balls, which I think are made partially of concrete. You're right. The amount of hard leather. I have a bruise on my forearm or on my bicep from catching the punts the other day, which, I mean, why? Why does the ball need to be that hard and that slick? The thing is, like, I got to almost every single football. I was in position. It's just they were... I think he put Vaseline on them before we started.
No, see, I just look at it as it was so hard. And I had a conversation with somebody ahead of time who asked me if I was going to be wearing pads and a helmet to protect myself. And in hindsight, probably would not have been a bad idea. But I said my strategy was to catch the ball against my midsection, which is where I have some padding, T-Frank. So,
you know what frustrated me? So Landon brought out a junior size football before Alex Falcons got there, and I was catching that ball one-handed. I was running routes. I caught it. I was high pointing the football. I secured, and it was a little, you're right, it was a little bit underflated. So I got an overinflated sense of confidence heading into the actual competition. And then when they started kicking boulders at me, I started to, I always, you know, the phrase, you fall to your training. You don't rise to, yes, the occasion. You fall to your level of training. Well, Jim, neither of us have any training whatsoever. So, like, theoretically, I know exactly how to catch a football flying through the air in that way, but I have not done it. So I, you know, Well, you have to see the video. I don't want to give it too much away.
That's it. But I will point this out. Not that I caught every ball, but when I caught a ball, T. Frank was the first one out to congratulate me. So thank you for that, T. Frank. All right. As much as I'm sure our listeners are hanging on our every word about our exploits on the football field.
Describing a video they may have never seen before. For sure.
Which they definitely haven't seen. It hasn't been released yet. When it comes out, we'll talk about it then. But let's move forward. Let's talk a little bit about Penn State football. I know you were a bit busy this weekend. There was some activity, but the one name that came up that should be familiar to our listeners is Brady O'Hara. That's the name. Is he a tight end? Is he an offensive lineman? I think, T. Frank, your advice or your recommendation would be to be a lineman, but until he decides he wants to be a tackle, he'd be a tight end. Tell us what you did see from Brady O'Hara this weekend.
Okay, so to kind of paint the picture in some context, starting in June, Penn State holds prospect camps where they have players from the class of 2028 on up. And one of the common things that has happened throughout the last several seasons is that Phil Troutwein has offensive linemen from the area that are committed to the program, or even Donovan Harbor came in to work with him at these prospect camps, because it's you have to pay your way to get there, but it's a camp where you get to get instruction from the Penn State coaches, and you don't have to be a commit. You can be any offensive lineman. So Cooper Cousins came for two straight years in the summer to get instruction and to, you know, get a little bit of an edge. Brady O'Hara at Elite 11, I think it was 2 weeks ago, was playing tight end, going through tight end drills and working with the quarterbacks in that situation. He was an offensive lineman this weekend. He was with the O-lineman. He worked with Frank Leonard. He worked with Phil Troutwein. I don't think there's the ambiguity here that he's an offensive lineman to Penn State. He's going to buy into being an offensive lineman at Penn State, but he's going to play tight end his senior season at North Catholic. So when you're at Elite 11 and you're with some of the best quarterbacks in the country, it makes a lot of sense if you want to play tight end and get better for your senior season. But when he's working with the Nittany Lions, he was at the offensive line. He was pass blocking and run blocking and working through those fundamentals, trying to get better at that particular skill set. So that's really the story. It's not, we hadn't really talked to Brady. We hadn't really gotten that information about what he wants to be, what he is. And that explains why he's not packing on 25, 30 pounds, because he still needs to be a tight end for his school to, you know, play for his team. And then after that, he's going to transition to the offensive line. Now, there's always wiggle room here, but I think it's pretty clear based on this first camp, Penn State definitely wants him to play tackle, and he is willing to play tackle. He would love to be a tight end, but we don't always get what we want, and the most mature among us are willing to listen to other people, and I think that describes Brady, where he is going to be coachable, he is going to listen to the coaching staff, he's going to do what they think is best because he trusts that they know more about football than what he wants. And so I think that's the major takeaway, is that it's a long, long process, and some of it won't start right away. He's not going to walk on to Penn State's campus in 2025 and be ready to compete at left or right tackle. But he's a guy that has the athletic skills, the frame, and I think the work ethic to get there and be a quality prospect.
Well, first of all, you talking about having the wisdom to listen to smarter people around us. If you and I had done that, we would not have been out in the intramural field trying to catch kickoffs. But talking about Brady O'Hara, and I always keep pointing out that being a tackle financially is probably a smarter decision. And if that helps him get on the field at Penn State. So now he worked out. Was there anything you could get from that camp, seeing him play at tackle, an assessment?
Yeah, so if you go to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, we have the video up on the site, so you can see for yourself how he went through the one-on-one drills. And, I wrote about all of this stuff this weekend after the camp. The main thing I'd say is that he's kind of in the position that a lot of players are, even that play offensive line, where his run blocking skills, and I mean, does he know how to position his body? Does it feel intuitive for him to get in the proper stance and to use the proper footwork and technique? Not necessarily is he good at it as a skill, but does he have the foundational abilities? His run blocking is ahead of his pass blocking. You know, it makes sense. As a tight end, you run block. So he's got some familiarity there. And I think that's where you can see the promise and why he would be such a good offensive line candidate. Because despite the fact that he's 6'6", he's got a great pad level, great bend, athleticism. And you know, that flexibility is a version of athleticism that isn't just speed and, you know, movement skills. But pass blocking is an alien form of movement. It is the exact opposite of everything you do in your life, which is to move forward. So to move backwards with the proper procedure and the proper footwork and all those things takes some time. And based on what I saw from him, that was the very first time that he had ever pass blocked. So it was a little rough, but he worked through it, and I think he kept at it. And there were some moments where he failed, and then he recovered and was able to continue to fight through the exercise. So, you know, if you're looking at it and expecting him to be pristine and perfect at it, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be alarmed, but you have to have some context of it is the very first time he was doing anything like that before.
I think, Frank, whenever you look at a player, though, especially he's a high school junior, just going into his high school senior class, playing a different position, you can't judge these guys on their the skill set of how technique and how to do it, because they haven't been doing it. What you have to look for are just, do they have the physical skills to do it? Does he?
Yeah, that's why he's a Penn State commit. That's the whole thing, is that he's a 6'6" tight end who runs fast and moves laterally really well. The footwork, the foot speed, the quickness, the athletic traits are all there. If there's one thing I would say, though, that I noticed from him, is that despite the fact that he's 250 pounds, 255, somewhere in there, I think the strength index needs to improve. He's a guy who is as strong as his size. He's not stronger than his size, which you see from some guys just because they have certain traits. I think that development is going to be a big part of his projection of what he is once he gets to that offensive tackle size.
Very good, T. Frank. That is it for quarter number one. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's T. Frank Carr. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. T. Frank, we spent quarter number one talking probably a little too much about our exploits on the field, also about Brady O'Hara, potential Penn State either tight end or tackle. Looks like he'll be going to tackle, or at least that's what Penn State has in mind for him. I wanted to look ahead, though, to the Penn State 2024 season and kind of go position by position, but I didn't want to just ask the question, hey, T. Frank, how good are the running backs? You know, I'd like to ask you more pointed questions about the positions. Hopefully, they give us a little bit more information. That's going to be dependent on your answers more than my questions, but let's see. Okay. Let's start with this. I want to start on the offensive side of the ball, okay. T. Frank. And there's a great temptation to talk about Drew Aller, what his upside is. Talk about these wide receivers. But I want to talk about them together. Let's just talk about the passing game. Mm-hmm. And new offensive coordinator Andy Kotelicki, can he and how can he make the passing game progress a little bit with Drew Aller as the quarterback? We know that's going to be the case. And we pretty much know what we have at wide receiver also, T. Frank. Yeah. How can Andy Kotelicki make that better?
Efficiency. And so there's a hundred different ways we can get into this conversation, and I have explored all of them this offseason and wrote about and watched videos and put together stuff for the website to give you an idea of the different facets, because it's not just one thing, but it comes down to efficiency. And this is something that I described lately in my latest attempt to kind of nutshell all of this in one stat, which is PFF. It's an advanced stat that is a little obscure called yards per route run. And before we understand what efficiency means here, we have to understand what yards per route run is. And normally when you see a stat for a wide receiver, it's how many yards they get per catch. Or if you're going a little bit further, how many yards per target they get, or their average depth of target. So how are they being used? This is your total number of yards versus your total number of routes run, even when you don't get a target. So essentially, if you have a bunch of routes that you run and no yards, it's a lot of empty calories. It's an inefficient football player who is not being targeted as the number one wide receiver or as a heavy part of the passing game. Now, some players play a certain role where that is the case. So it's not like it's an end-all be-all of this guy is no good because he has a low yards per route run, which is why you need to look at all of these different metrics, because you could still have a high average depth of target. You could still have explosive plays, but you run a lot of routes to clear out other defenders, for example. But last season, all of Penn State's wide receivers had a bad yards per route run average. So the offense was incredibly inefficient when you look at yards per total pass plays. And if you look at what Andy Kotelicki was able to do, he ran fewer passing plays by a healthy margin than Penn State, but they got, I can't remember exactly if it was the same amount of yards or more yards than Penn State, but it was incredibly more efficient. So here's the gauge. Yards per route run, we all need to know what's normal and what's good. About 2 yards per route run is a healthy average. So kind of like a running back where you get that 3.5-4 yards, a receiver is not getting as many targets as a running back gets carries typically. And you get more yards per catch, but you are out there more often doing other things for the offense. So it's about 2. When you get into 2.5 upwards to 3, then you are a first-round draft pick, a top-5 player. Malik Nabers, I think it was 3.64. In the NFL, guys who get that high, they become all pros. But it's not something you sustain typically year over year. That's kind of a peak, and then you land somewhere in the high twos or mid-twos. Penn State's best receiver last year, from this perspective, was Keandre Lambert-Smith at 1.94. So he's just under average. And the rest of Penn State's receivers, when I was first filtering for all this, didn't qualify for enough targets. But both Dante Cephas and Trey Wallace were under 1.5 yards per route run, which is incredibly inefficient. Now, if you look at the Kansas receivers, all three of them were over 2.5 or in that area. So they are within this healthy margin of these guys are creating explosive plays and are a credible threat to the defense to open up the run game. Now, there's so much nuance that goes into that, but this is a very basic stat that when I put it out there, in the article, all three of the Kansas wide receivers were 1, 2, 3. And then all three of the Penn State receivers were 4, 5, 6. So now in this offense, through the different means, ways, and schemes that Andy Kotelicki gets receivers open, Penn State's receivers who have enough talent to do this have the opportunity to just be more efficient, which goes back to Drew Aller being more efficient with the football in this new ecosystem. And those are the ways where the offense doesn't have to change talent level, but the situation and the circumstance can just generally produce more consistency and efficiency, which will make a noticeable difference for the run game and everybody else involved. So I know that was a very long answer, but there's a lot of setup and understanding of something that is a little bit obscure, but I think perfectly describes the problem with Penn State last year and what they brought in to solve it.
I've never heard of that statistic, T. Frank, but now that you've brought it up, I'm fascinated by it. And I think the next logical question is, what within the statistics caused Penn State to fall short? Was it because they had too many incompletions? Was it that they had, is it considered running a route if it's a running play?
No.
But the receiver, so okay, it's just on the passing plays. So where did they come up short? How did they come up short? Was it they didn't run routes deep enough? They were too shallow? Was it too many incompletions? What specifically need they improve to make that stat better?
Well, that's where it gets into a cocktail of different things. It's not one area here that is saying, okay, you fix this, then it's all solved, because that could help. But let's start with lack of explosive plays. They did not efficiently throw the football down the field. When they did throw the football, it was not it's never going to be a high completion percentage when you throw the football down the field. If you do, you have a special season. You should appreciate it for what it is. I think Deshaun Hamilton, I think in 2017, was unbelievably efficient. I've never seen anybody as efficient as he was running deep routes from the slot, and was like 9 of 11 or 9 of 13 or something like that on explosive plays, deep plays from the slot. So those things are rare. But when you fall below a certain threshold, and again, we talk about Sean Clifford and how he was just above or just below average as a deep ball passer. He wasn't terrible, but that fluctuation is what kind of causes some of these efficiency metrics to rise and fall. Drew Aller also led the NCAA in throwaways. So he was tied for 8th among quarterbacks with 24 decisions to kill the play. That is good to not take a negative play, but when you're doing that too many times, that's also a negative that your offense is not being efficient, that you are having these sacks or things like that that are resulting in dead plays. Now it's 2nd and 7, it's 2nd and 12, or it's 3rd and 9, and now you're in another situation that is harder to overcome. So I would say those are the two main things is, yes, the completion percentage generally, but what goes into that are the lack of efficiency in deep plays and the nature of the offense, which was nobody respected the deep ball, so then they could sit on underneath routes, and they didn't get a lot of catch-and-run opportunities. So when they did catch the football on some of these comeback routes to the outside where they're just taking advantage of soft coverage, maybe they get 6 yards, and then that's it. So you get 6 yards, then you get 0, then you get 2, then you get 6, then you get 0, then you get 0. Your average starts to plummet.
Do you have the numbers on that for the tight ends also?
Yes. And this is, again, where Penn State, despite having unbelievably talented tight ends, was behind Kansas. And I know Mason Fairchild is a good football player, but you look at Theo Johnson, and he should be very, very proficient in this. Tight ends are less efficient overall than wide receivers because they just are targeted shorter areas down the field. They're used in more specific ways than receivers, who have more latitude to catch the ball, run, and be more explosive. Brock Bowers, 2.6, I want to say, yards per route run was the top of the NCAA last year. Makes sense. He's the 11th overall or 12th overall pick in the draft. So we're in the 1.7s for our comparison here. I think Mason Fairchild had 1.7, but Theo Johnson had 1.24. So basically a yard per route that he runs for a guy who a season ago averaged 17 yards per target last year. And that's where that efficiency metric can be a little skewed, because if you are used as a deep threat like he was in 2022, then you have maybe a lot of empty routes where you're not getting all of those explosive plays all the time. So it's not necessarily a one-to-one comparison for this is a good football player. But his efficiency dropped by a quarter of a yard, or a significant margin, to where he was the lowest on this list as the guy who is the most athletic of the group of players we're talking about. And that is a problem. So Tyler Warren coming into this year should also be more efficient. You'd imagine Khalil Dinkins and Andrew Rapelier maybe won't be as efficient because of their usage in the passing game, but they should be explosive when they see the football. And that's where all of this is centered around, is how explosive are they, and how often are they given the opportunity to get those yards when they do get a target. And so there's kind of the Penn State's offense from a passing perspective in all of these metrics was much lower than Kansas was last year. And I don't want to disrespect the Kansas skill position players, but you would expect Penn State with their recruiting rankings and their ability to develop talent from an athletic standpoint of putting freaks into the NFL should have at least comparable athletes, if not better athletes, at most of these positions.
Well, what you also have to add to that equation when comparing to Kansas, Penn State wasn't playing against Big 12 defenses, and Kansas wasn't playing against Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah, and there's stuff like that that you can't account for. That's true. But Penn State also plays a lot of not very good teams. You know, like Maryland's decision to play cover four or cover zero and then just give Penn State a bunch of easy reads for Drew Aller to throw the football down the field, it's also part of the story. You know, Indiana's a good, tough defense, but Penn State should be able to weather that storm and create explosive plays over time in a game like that. And then, you know, the Rutgers and all the Northwesterns, on average, these defenses are better. But the talent level at Penn State should exceed that anyway. And they had the talent to do that. And last year was the situation where they didn't, with that talent, offensively exceed the expectations to create those explosive plays.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it. Quarter number two. Stick around. We're going to ask T. Frank.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He is T. Frank. I'm Jim. It's time for Ask T. Frank. This is where we're going to take your questions for T. Frank. If you want to send in a question for him, just download our app, Keystone Sports, wherever you get your apps, and send in a question. Hit the Ask T. Frank button. And T. Frank, we've got our first question is from Sue in Howard, who says, what actually happens during an official visit? Is it an evaluation of skills, or is it more of a personal tour of facilities and meetings with coaches? I apologize if this is a naive question. I'm a lifelong Penn State fan, but I've only recently begun to learn about recruiting. Before you answer that question, T. Frank, I will point out that, and I sent Sue the link, we actually did a show, I think it was a week ago, with Landon.
I get the confusion there completely. We are like twins.
Exactly.
Like
movie
twins.
That's usually my reaction. And yes, I'm the Danny DeVito in that comparison. But we did a show with Landon where he talked the entire show about what goes on at an official visit from the player's perspective. And yes, it is about when you get to that point of the official visit, it is about treating the player well. You're trying to sell the player on your university. Yeah. Maybe we could shift this question around a little bit and talk about, like, you had – there was an event this weekend where you were there and where – let's do it from the Penn State side. What are they looking for in a player, either in the official visit – or in this kind of weekend where there's a camp and evaluation of players?
So there's a couple of things I'll say that it's not just rolling out the red carpet. It is mostly that. But there's also a certain level of some of these players are coming from out of the region, so you want to get accurate data on them. So Sue asking that question is there's a little bit of both in the situation of what does he weigh now? What is his reach? Do we know how long his arms are? Do we know exactly how tall he is? some of these things, when they're from a recruiting service, they're unverified. There's a lot of lying that goes on, Jim, because
there's
not a single man on earth that is going to be honest about their height. So you've got to work through that, plus the pressure of you need to be as big as possible to be recruited. So a lot of these details need to be filled in, and this is another opportunity. Sometimes you've got this information already, but also you want to see, is he still growing? Do we have that information? And that's what the camps are about. Like, as much as the football side of things is important, it's a data collection tool to understand who can actually play at this next level. And there are a certain percentage of people that don't want to hear about reach, height, size, all of these things that go into the recruiting process. And here's the thing, Penn State is not stupid. They model a lot of what they do after the NFL evaluation going to that level, because there's a certain threshold that consistently over time has been proven. If you don't meet these requirements, you will have a hard time actually playing the game of football. You will not be big enough. You will not have the growth potential at this stage to grow into a player who has the strength to compete at the Division I level or beyond. So having all of this information will give you a sense of, can they do it? And then the personal in-person evaluation of certain players coming out at this point also goes into it, because the data is not just the data. There has to be some context. So, for example, one of the players that I saw at camp is a Division I football player, 2027 player, but he has no idea how to run a 40. So his 40 looks like he's slow, but he is not slow. It's just the technique and all the things that go into it are a part of the evaluation of where is he starting from when it comes to these athleticism traits and his understanding of how to play.
Okay, good answer. Let's move on. Let's get to Matt in Massachusetts, who says, Jim and T. Frank, I have a team training question. How do players and coaches train for the noise of the crowd? Or is this a tightly guarded trade secret?
P.S. tightly graded at all.
P.S. Sorry. Jim, a throwback movie to suggest for Landon is Hackers. Just a real quick note on that. Landon and I had a conversation about the movie The Godfather, which I could not believe Landon had never seen in his life. And it was, okay, there are certain classic movies that Landon needs to know about. Godfather is one of them. I'm not sure Hackers is one. So let's get back to the idea of training for crowd noise. T. Frank, how do they do it?
So it's not a secret whatsoever. If you live anywhere near the Hills Plaza, you can hear the noise from the Lash practice field like a quarter mile away. They just have giant speakers and they play simulated crowd noise. They get pretty detailed too about like what the noise is to not the frequency of the sound. And James Franklin has talked about this, of like trying to get the right frequency of what crowd noise actually sounds like, you know, cause coming out of a speaker, it's different. And then what, even down to what's the fight song of the other team, and then just pumping that into ambient noise during practice, and just be careful. Cause you know, we get 10 minutes of practice, to watch during the season. And don't walk in front of the speaker if you can help it, because you will leave with tinnitus. I've done it several times. So it's basic. You make a lot of loud noise and then you play it while they're trying to practice.
I think, though, as much as they can simulate the noise, you can't simulate the excitement, the adrenaline when you get on the field for real. And you know, it's just a totally different feel.
It's about the process of communicating non-verbally. That's what it's about. It's not, you can't simulate 100,000 people or 90,000 people or however many, at an away stadium, and the actual chemistry, the human biochemistry that happens from a bunch of excited people all in one spot. But you can go, okay, aside from that, how do we handle communicating in those moments? Like we said to start the show, you fall to your level of training, and when you have all these stressors, if you haven't practiced it before, you won't know what to do. You won't do it correctly. So they try to practice all these little things as well.
Okay, let's go to Andy in Souderton, who says, how much of a learning curve is there with a new coordinator? Bigger deal on offense or defense? And how big a handicap will it be in the first game against West Virginia to have two new coordinators?
It's a big deal. And that's what James Franklin was talking about all of January and February, is he was trying to shorten the learning curve. Because let's say you're in college and you took Spanish in high school, but now you want to be an educated fancy pants person and you took, I don't know, Italian. Somebody, your boy did that. You are starting over. Like, you're starting over completely in terms of how to learn a language and the root understanding of what means what. Now, there's always some carryover. There's always certain concepts that play the same in every offense. So football in general, there's not so much variation, but there's enough of the way you call things, literally what you call them. The understanding of, I say banana, and that means you run this route. Or I say tiger, and it means this formation. It's all in code. So you have to learn a new code, and that confusion of what you knew before and getting rid of that and then installing this new concept in your brain of now tiger means this formation or this personnel grouping. That is all what you have to do. So it's a crash course in language, code speak, and then understanding the football concept and formation, et cetera. So it's a lot. Offensively, I think it's more complicated because there's more precision involved in route combinations, in blocking schemes, in all of that stuff. Defensively, you can't be wrong. You have to be on the same page. But zone coverage is zone coverage. There's only so many ways to carve up the field. And then some of the details of how are we playing those zone coverages, where we call this and normally you spot drop, which is I'm going to drop 4 yards and be 4 yards outside of the tackle, where now you have to read the route coming at you and you either play that zone or you pass him off to the next guy and wait for somebody else based on what you anticipate that route to be. That's where defense can get a little bit more advanced and can be a little more complicated. And so those are kind of the things that you have to understand of what you're being asked to do based on the coded language you're getting from your coach. And it takes a lot. You know, I make the comparison of like just learning football on a level where I could understand these things took me 2 years, let alone having to execute it just to understand some of these things. And my process of learning it has not finished. Football is a life learning thing where you're never done exploring different aspects of the game, especially if you're like a quarterback that has to know every single piece of the offense and defense to understand the full picture, to know where to put the football. So it is a big handicap, which is why they tried so hard to streamline this process and why they want the players to go over it as much as possible in the summer without the coaches and their instruction, to give them an opportunity to be good out of the gate. But it will not be as smooth and efficient week one as it will be, hopefully, for them by October.
And that's another part of this equation, is playing a team like West Virginia first as opposed to playing Akron.
That's why there's a preseason in the NFL. That's why coaches one of these cupcake games to start, because they don't have professional athletes. As much as it's becoming professional, they're going to class. Like, you know, they might have to miss certain days of practice because they've got a chemistry lab that's 3 hours long. These are the things where you're not dedicating your entire life and every ounce of your time to do football, even though that's what I think fans expect out of players now, because that's what coaches seem to preach at times, is football, 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 life is ball, ball is life. And there are, for these college players, other things that they have to be academically eligible or else ball doesn't matter.
Wait a minute, T. Frank, are you telling me that academics factor in here somewhere for these collegiate athletes?
At some universities, yes. At other ones, maybe not so much.
All right. Let's sneak one in really, really fast. I know we are quick to pass judgment on young players like Javen Williams and Alex Birchmeyer. What's your assessment? Do they still have the same ceiling? That's Gary from Westchester. Gary,
thank you for saying that, but I want to swear because, yes, they still have the same ceiling. It's the football. Like, I'm just going to nutshell it. Football's really hard. offensive line, you have to be technically great and you have to be massively strong. And it takes a time, takes a certain amount of time to learn both of those things as an offensive lineman. Playing as a freshman is an anomaly, not a normal thing.
Very good, T. Frank. Stick around. We got more in quarter number four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. T. Frank, we got kind of busy in quarter number one, quarter number two. We were going to start talking. I had questions for every position on the field, offense and defense. We didn't get very far with it. So today we're just going to stick with the offense. Maybe we'll hit the defense next week. There's nothing wrong.
Did we get through? I don't think we got through. We got through one. We got through just the passing game, I think.
Yeah, we just got through. Well, here's some news for you, T. Frank. We're not done with that either.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here, I guess this could be considered part of the passing game, and you could tell me. I have a question here, which is one of the things we keep hearing about is Andy Kotelnicki's ability to use two quarterbacks, okay? Mm-hmm. I know we got to ask this. We've talked about it before. So how do you best use Bo Perbola?
Yeah, and I think that this is a question that is the same as it was last year. How do you best use a quarterback when James Franklin, I think it's pretty clear at this point by the coordinators he's hired and the systems he's run, that every variation has had some sort of quarterback run game element, whether it was a large part or a small part. So that's important to Penn State and to the Penn State offense and to college football. Let's be honest, to college football in general. Not saying that it has to be on the Tommy Stevens, Will Levis side of how they used players, but having that card up your sleeve is important. And Drew brings an element of that, but it's on the lower end. Bo brings a lot of that, but his passing game, I don't think is trash because I think he throws a good deep ball. I think he's a good football player. His decision-making of when to give up on a play is the opposite of Drew from what I've seen, where he needs to know when he's beat and not put the ball in harm's way. But he does bring this element of a true threat on the ground. And I don't have a great answer for how they're going to do that. But the elements of the offense have to be in there where both players can use the whole offense. Because if you have just a package where Bo Perbola only does one thing, the defense can gear up to stop that. So Bo needs to be able to operate the passing game. Drew needs to be able to operate the run game. That hasn't changed from last year. How you intelligently apply their skills or even get them on the field, because remember, Bo didn't get on the field a whole lot until late in the season, is how you kind of split the baby. I think the major part, and this is just my theory of what I saw from Kansas last year, is they used a lot of two-back sets and they used a lot of triple option style elements with speed options to the outside, the opportunity to throw the football based on the numbers and the way the defense reacts. I think you're going to see Bo in those situations with Catron Allen and Nick Singleton on the field together at the same time. He's going to have to throw the football in those situations, though. He can't just be a running threat, because even if you've got three dynamic threats in the backfield, the defense can sell out to stop that. There are things they can do to force Bo to do something with the football, like only pitch it onto the short side of the field, where then Catron Allen doesn't have any room to run. Or he has to keep the ball, and then he gets abused by a safety coming down out of the secondary. So he has to be able to throw the football to generate these explosive plays. And Drew needs to be able to operate a similar package so that you don't know what's coming. And that's the hardest part, is how do you blend that? Because I think they'll try, and I think you'll see Bo in short yardage and goal line situations, but it can't be just that. So I'd say 10% of the plays, you see him in certain packages heavily influenced with a run game, but you also are going to see him throw the football in 2024. What am I doing?
Well, the one thing you brought up is not just that Bo Prabula has to be able to pass the ball, but Drew Aller has to be able to run the ball, or at least be a threat to. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that was part of the strategy in 2023. That's one thing where I'll differ from you a little bit. He really wasn't. There were plays that looked like he had the option to hold the ball and run it, but he never did. I stand corrected. I recall one time, and he actually got a first down on it.
Yeah,
but it was one time, which I hardly think amounts to it being a threat that the defense has to worry about.
Yeah, and so that's an area where he has to be better. He has to be better at making those decisions with the football in those option and RPO situations, because that's a big part of the quarterback game in college. And, you know, I think his contribution to the run game came on passing downs where he scrambled. And I thought he was good in those situations as well, where he was able to do more than people, I think, expected of him when he did break the pocket. But even then, he was tentative to run. He was tentative to break the pocket and to give up on the passing concept instead of... I remember Sean Clifford. It was so frustrating where it was maybe his first read, and if it wasn't there, like, just the saying of cover one and run, baby. Watching Sean Clifford of, okay, my first read isn't there, second progression, I don't care because I know that I'm faster than the Mike linebacker, and he would get 7 yards, and maybe on the backside there was an opportunity for a play that was for 15 in the passing concept. Drew is dying on a hill of trying to get that second read, and sometimes he needs it. That decision-making of in-the-moment decision-making of what's best for this play, he can make those quicker. And I think part of that is a clarity from the top on down. More set rules, less things to think about, more I know X, so therefore Y. And I think there were too many things he had to process last year where it got all up in his head and he didn't operate with the same instincts we saw from him as a freshman and as a high school senior, which obviously is very different, but speaks to his confidence and what he can do when he is confident. So that's another one of these areas of just small efficiencies that should improve dramatically if Drew's been able to learn the offense and get it down in time to operate. And I do think that's an area where this new helmet communication can help. It can boost some of that efficiency in his own mind by taking some of the things he has to remember off his plate, because he can hear directly from his coordinator or from Danny O'Brien on the sideline, whoever it is that has a communication to the headset.
The other part to this, T. Frank, that frustrates me is when I've talked about Drew Aller being a threat to run the ball, I get the, well, why do you want him to run the ball? If you're going to run it, wouldn't you rather Nick Singleton run it than Drew Aller? Yes, but if the defense knows you're never going to keep the ball, you're always going to give it to Nick Singleton, guess what? That's who they're focused on. How about just presenting yourself as a threat to run it so the defense has to think about that?
That's the whole point. That's the whole point of the read option. That's the whole point of that particular style of offense, is because then the defensive end on the backside, you can do different things if you're the defense, from overloading the front side of a run play to not being as aggressive on the primary concept and make those guys hesitate a second, and then, bam, you've got an explosive run play. Saquon Barkley is an elite, ridiculously good talent. He was helped because Trace McSorley was also very fast. And you have this combination of guys who, if there's one thing that Trace was excellent at, his decision-making in the moment of when to throw, when to run, when to keep, when to give, was usually really bleeping good. And that comes from, time on task, having done it since, I assume, high school, and also a certain amount of inborn instinct of just, your decision-making under pressure. And this is the biggest area. And I know that I tend to come off very positive in these situations of, here's the areas for growth, and, I believe in the work ethic of these players and these guys, and I think that they can get there. But there is that element of, does Drew have it? And he has not expressed it fully in his play so far. And some people have given up on him because of that, because there is an idea that if you don't do it right away, you will never do it. And I don't know that's necessarily true. but I also can't discredit it. So there is that reality. And you have, like, I have to be fair and acknowledge that he may never get there in the decision-making and all of these things. As long as those people are also willing to say, maybe he does get it. And we come to some middle ground, which in our Lord year 2024 on the internet does not happen. But again, I am an optimistic person who tries to imagine the best scenario for everybody involved.
And I think what we do know is that Drew Aller will have the right work ethic. Doesn't mean he'll ever get it, like you said, but I think he will put the work in to do it. All right, I'm going to go from the question of how do you use Bo Pribula, the backup quarterback. I'm going to ask a similar question at tight end. It seems like over the last several years, T. Frank, we've had a real defined pecking order. Mm-hmm. Here's the number one tight end. Here's the number two. Here's the number three. And every year they bump up one on the notch. Tyler Warren, he's the number one. But I think this year it's a little more interesting between Rapoulier and Khalil Dinkins. It seems like there's different skill sets there. It may not be distinct two and three. It might be 2A and 2B. How do you best use those two backup tight ends?
So I want to go back to the first part of what you say there, in that this is Tyler Warren's year. So how do you best use Tyler Warren informs who you use next to him. And the beauty of what Tyler Warren is he is a very good combination of both roles within the offense. There is the inline Y tight end, the guy who lines up next to the right tackle and the left tackle and blocks from that perspective. And then there's the move tight end, the H-back who lines up in the slot sometimes, lines up in the backfield, can line up as a fullback, a wing. He can do all of those things. So how do you maximize him in the offense to put him in a position against linebackers and safeties to get those explosive plays, or to spring Catron Allen and Nick Singleton for explosive plays? So that is primary goal number one. And then which one of those guys in those situations accentuates the rest of the skill sets needed on the football field at that time? So if he's at the Y, which I expect him to be kind of that primary Y tight end, because he can do a little bit more in the run game, and you can use him maybe not as versatile of a way, but you can use him in a more directly impacting the run game sort of way. I think that's an area where then you say Dinkins or Rapoulier, who's the better all-around player who can block and catch? And then when you put Warren at the H-back, who's got the skills to back him up at the Y? And that's where Rapoulier, I think, has the advantage of he can play both. He's a little bit more like Tyler Warren, where he's got the frame and he's got the 250 pounds walking around thing going on, where he could line up in line at Y tight end. Dinkins is a receiver type player who might be, and I don't know this because I need to see more from him, he might be an H-back only, where he is lining up in the slot a lot in the backfield. He's taking on linebackers and not defensive ends as a blocker. Those things that I don't know here yet are going to determine how they use those two players. And so I can envision a world where all three are used steadily in the offense. Maybe not all the time, but they each have a role. And so this year, I do think it's a little murky, because that's really the conversation of how Andy Kolnicki wants to use those players and what you're majoring in. Is it three receivers, two tight ends, two running backs? Because you have to make those decisions as well.
Okay, that is it. Thank you, T. Frank. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.